Board is back in session. And the next case is Ohio State Troopers Association versus Point Blank Enterprises. And Darren Somerville is here for the appellants. And Brian Aircole is here for Appley Point Blank. And Mr. Aircole, are you online?
Yes, Your Honor. For some reason, I'm apologizing. I'm not showing up on Zoom.
There you are.
There, we got you.
Sorry about that, Your Honors. I apologize for that inconvenience.
All right, no problem. We're ready to proceed. Mr. Somerville, you may argue on behalf of the appellants.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, everyone. It's good to see everyone again. And may it please the court. I'd like to start with what I think is the most obvious and transparent error in the district court's analysis, and that was a denial of our class certification motion based upon administrative feasibility. This court back earlier this year decided the Cherry decision and then followed that with Renzel just on June 29th. They made abundantly clear that Rule 23 simply does not accommodate the notion of administrative feasibility in the Rule 23 certification context. It may very well be wrapped in the manageability analysis, but that's not what the court did. Renzel couldn't make it more clear that if the court engages in an administrative feasibility analysis, as took up a great deal of the trial court's 34-page order, then that is an abuse of discretion, simply because that is not a legal standard that is enunciated in Rule 23. Renzel further invalidates the reasoning the trial court used in finding against us on the administrative feasibility argument by explaining that, for example, claim forms are perfectly acceptable in identifying members of the class. And that's the larger question, of course, is that the class just simply needs to be objectively verifiable. In this case, I think we have a unique way of looking at it because each of these vests, these ballistic vests that are sold by Point Blank, have a serial number. They're expensive. They're about $700 each, and they're generally done through distributors, and the distributors keep lists as well. So whether you use the actual point of sale data, the actual distribution list, or Point Blank's own records, the manageability of this class is really not in question. And simply because I don't get to talk about many cases involving yogurt, I would simply also cite the court to the Fitzpatrick case, simply because even if we went behind the scenes back before Cherry, I still think the trial court unfortunately erred in holding us to the standards that it did. So with that, the thornier issues are perhaps the second enumeration of error that we raise, and that's the fact that the court engaged in a merits analysis in deciding that essentially there is no point of sale defect in these particular ballistic vest straps. To get there, the court had violated all the rules that the U.S. Supreme Court in Amgen said you can't. That is weighing the evidence, dismissing contrary testimony, ignoring expert testimony on intrinsic deficiencies. And the root of all that comes down to the court's finding, whether it's either on predominance or on the merits generally and all the other factors that we have to prove at the 23 context, that is that there is no defect at the point of sale. And to do that, I would say if the court has to look at just one piece of evidence, look at Exhibit 36 under Docket Entry 161. That's our expert report, Dr. Cole and Mr. Herman. The very first paragraph essentially invalidates all of the weighing that the trial court did in this situation. It dispels with the notion that shearing is absolutely the only way that these vests fail. It disposes of the issue that peeling off the particular Velcro.
Is there any indication?
Itself also causes.
Mr. Somerville?
I'm sorry, Judge Wilson. I couldn't quite get that.
All right. I'll start over again because it looks like there was a glitch on the computer. I guess my question is there any indication in this record that we could point to conclude that the vest would fail if it's used properly?
Yes. Dr. Cole's report, which is Exhibit 36 at Docket Entry 161, goes through an extensive analysis that deals with testing of both new vests and old vests, and actually tests the vests, not just the straps, like my colleagues purported studies. And it goes through and it says, no matter what, because of the materials and the way these vests are designed, that is, it's a Velcro design where there are hooks and loops. The problem is that the materials used in the same product, the hooks are too strong. And so when you do separate it, whether either to take it off or on, or to wash it, which is also important to the usage of the vest, then those hooks will rip those little loops out. In other words, it's just a bad strap when it comes down to it. And what Dr. Cole, who is the only hoop and loop expert in the case, concluded is that because of whether it's either shearing, peeling, or normal use, then these vests are unfit for life safety devices and will likely fail within a year. We know that even in the so-called proper use scenario, although we don't really know what that is, because we do know that Point Blank advertises the fact that these can be pulled off with one hand, and they've received plenty of other complaints about the foreseeability of this use. We do know that even the normal use, where two of our class representatives would take the vest off by pulling it over their heads, even their vest failed, even though they said they never separated the Velcro. So that would be where I would point the court initially. And then also in our brief, we also outlined the large number, frankly, of complaints that Point Blank was, or the defendant was getting, 30,000 straps that were replaced for some reason. And by the way, the vests come with two straps. So we're on set number three by the time those are sent out for repair. We also know that as early as 2014, we had reports to the company saying these vests don't even last a year. And again, the company doesn't say anything. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't advertise anything to the contrary. This whole shearing thing seemed to come into play once the class action concept came into play. So that's really what we're talking about. Amgen, the U.S. Supreme Court, says there can be no free-ranging exploration into the merits at the certification stage, and that a probable outcome on the merits has no part, that's the Supreme Court's language, not mine, in the certification process. Here, we don't have a probable outcome prediction. We have the outcome. The trial judge decided essentially what is a summary judgment issue against us, ignoring the expert evidence in particular along the way.
I have a record question. I thought, and I may have the numbers wrong, which is why I ask it, that 99% of the people said they didn't undo the straps. They just donned and duffed it over their head. That the vast majority of people that use these vests just put it on and off over their head, and that there were no failures within the 5 year, because they're not undoing the straps or doing anything about them. They just put it on and off. Where am I wrong in that?
Well, I'm reticent to call an Article III judge wrong, but perhaps I can say, let's look at it this way. One, the return rate that is the basis for that particular statistic is incorrect. It not only loops in four different types of other vests that aren't even involved in the class, but it's only just about returns as opposed to complaints or actual failures. We know that there are 30,000 straps out of some 200 and some odd of these vests that were sold that had to be replaced on a third or tertiary level. The also notion that the return is sort of the bailiwick.
Help me a minute, then go back and break it down.
Yes, ma'am.
I thought it was undisputed that most officers just put it over their head on and off, like 90% or something like that. We'll get to where that number comes from. Wherever it comes from, the vast majority do that. Is that correct?
I think it's the danger of statistics. I mean, it is. And if there's one 29 officer survey that says none of them take it this way, we also, of course, have the deposition testimony from the corporate representative that say they are aware of this. We also are aware of the 2014 complaint for the Denver Police Department that the biggest complaint from the customer survey is that these straps don't even last a year. So whether that's either from shearing or peeling
Are there any complaints that these straps don't last from the officers, or do you allege any complaints at the point of sale from the officers who just put it on and off and don't undo the straps?
Absolutely. In fact, two of the class representatives, as my colleagues are fond of pointing out, only take off this vest over their head. Now that seems very difficult. If you could say, I thought about wearing one of these, but thought that was probably an ill-advised move. But if you take it off over your head, you have to undo some of these straps and so on. It's just the ones on the shoulders that are important. But even those officers who are, again, the representatives of the class, who say they only took it off over their heads, their vests failed in practice in the field as well. So,
and how did it fail in practice in the field?
The ballistic part, the heavy part, either in front or the back, would separate from the Velcro closures, because apparently, and I am no chemical engineer like Dr. Cole, but apparently, no matter how you use this vest, at some level, these Velcro straps, which are unlike any in the industry, then those are going to fail. And of course, the Velcro has to be undone
even in normal use. Even if you use it properly.
That's correct, Your Honor, because the Velcro at the very least has to be undone for cleaning. You can't wash it with the ballistic materials in place. It also, of course, our test through Dr. Cole simulated that as well, because these are heavy and they're hot. They're usually black, the concealed vests are at least. And so they need to be washed because they get sweaty and dirty, and that also further degrades the straps themselves. So with that, I think the next logical landing point in my next couple of minutes is the notion that the trial court let that error, that is the point of sale concept, infect the rest of the analysis. I mean, what these officers have done is paid $700 for a vest that is supposed to work in the field under different wearing and use, that's point blank's words, of course, for 5 years. They didn't get that product. And that's why this manifestation argument is really not one that I think.
Can the users, the officers, personalize their vests and wear them differently? And some can take them off by shearing, and some can take them off by peeling, and they just use their vests differently?
They do, and that's known to point blank from the word go. We know they advertise on their website, for example, how to take this vest off, and it involves both shearing and peeling. The entire vest is actually advertised as being incredibly efficient to take off. In other words, you can do it with your dominant hand, so you don't have your other hand encumbered if you need to do it in an emergent situation. So the two other errors we raise, I think, are very straightforward as well. We also claim as error the court's failure to certify an injunctive, a B2 class, on behalf of the associational plaintiffs. The court got it wrong when he said that money damages predominated. Those particular clients don't even have money damages claims. They're associational. They didn't buy any of the vests. They simply want a warning that point blank should have used in the first place. And then the final and very much as a sort of, again, one that seems straightforward, Mr. Porras brought claims on behalf of this particular vest that he had purchased, as well as the class of vests that are substantively identical. We think under the Carter case, Judge Hull, you remember that one, then it's very clear that we don't have to have an individual as a class rep who bought every kind of model of a gun, model of a car, anything like that, as long as the defect is the same. And most presciently, obviously, for Mr. Porras, he did buy one of these vests, and he has standing to bring a class on that behalf. That was his fallback class, and the court didn't even consider that.
I need to ask one other question for clarification. We're talking about point of sale, and you're saying it will fail even without, if you just don and duff it, you know, and never undo the straps. And you're saying that allegation's in the complaint?
I can't tell you exactly what we've alleged in the complaint. I know it's in our expert report, and that just even through normal use, these are defective products because of the nature of the Velcro connection system itself. It will eventually fail
And is the defect that you're alleging in normal use the failure of the strap system?
Because if the straps fail, then I didn't mean
that's
to.
That's the defect, is the strap system.
The straps will no longer be able to hold the weight of the ballistic insert. Yes.
Okay. And the defect there, I know it has something to do with material and the weight of the Velcro and everything, but the rate of failure is demonstrably different if you don and duff versus if you use another method of use. I mean, you have to agree to that. I don't know whether that's relevant to the outcome here, but even your experts say the rate of failure, i.e. my first year, third year, whatever, is materially different depending on how you use it. Is that correct?
I think what our experts would say to answer your question, if they were in my place, is that from the word go, it's a defective strap. You can make it worse through normal use, which even Point Blank preaches as a way to take this off because it's efficient. But from the outset, though, it is a defective product.
Okay, I got that, that it's defective, but the rate, but when it becomes, when it fails, is different depending upon how you use it.
The ultimate outcome with use, yes, does affect it by making it greater. That is correct. You can have a greater likelihood of harm, like Judge Rosenbaum, you wrote about in the Rosen case, that those kinds of misuses, though, are really merits issues that we believe shouldn't have been reached by the district court. If I would could reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Somerville. We'll hear from Mr. Urquhart.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brian Urquhart. I have the privilege of representing Point Blank in this appeal. Judge Ruiz did not abuse his discretion in denying class certification. He rigorously evaluated the claims, the defenses, the legal issues, and the evidence, including fact and expert testimony, and he made numerous factual findings in his comprehensive and detailed 35-page opinion. Based upon these factual findings, Judge Ruiz properly determined that this is not the rare one-size-fits-all case where class certification is appropriate. His rigorous analysis of the record is exactly what the Supreme Court requires by way of Comcast, by way of Walmart, and it should be applauded, not reversed. I would like to explain some of the many reasons why Judge Ruiz's class certification should be affirmed, and then I'd like to turn to some of the reasons why plaintiff's arguments to the contrary lack merit. There are many reasons why Judge Ruiz found that class certification must be denied. I would like to focus on plaintiff's failure to show commonality and predominance. And there are actually five separate and independent reasons why any class trial here would be overwhelmed with predominating individual issues and why no class can be certified. And these generally sort of track the elements of the plaintiff's claims in this case. One, there's no evidence of any class-wide defect. Two, there is no class-wide design for SSBSS. Three, causation certainly can't be resolved on a class-wide basis. Four, there is no common class-wide evidence of fact of injury. And fifth, plaintiffs failed to offer a valid class-wide damages model tied to their theory of liability. All of those findings are made in Judge Ruiz's opinion. First, I'd like to start with the issue of class-wide defect. In a product defect case, no class can be certified when there is no common evidence of a class-wide defect. That is precisely the situation here. Judge Ruiz found that plaintiff's defect theory hinges on an atypical and uncommon use of the unique hook and loop feature of SSBS vests. That atypical and uncommon use is narrow. It involves shearing or ripping SSBS hook or loop features to take off the vest. That factual finding is not clearly erroneous. And that factual finding, Your Honors, which I know was discussed in Mr. Somerville's argument, appears on page 15 of Judge Ruiz's report, where he says, plaintiffs acknowledge that the rate of degradation is dependent upon the way officers disengage the SSBS straps, but contend that the straps will fail irrespective of whether an officer shears or peels them. This assertion finds no support in the record. And then it goes on to discuss plaintiffs' own expert report, which only addressed the issue of when a vest fails through shearing and made no determination whatsoever through of what happens with a vest if it's peeled off or if an officer takes it on and off over his head, as Judge Hall pointed out. Point Blank, by contrast, presented expert evidence that SSBS vests do not fail if they are removed through other processes like peeling the SSBS feature, where if the officer takes the vest off over his or her head. And plaintiff's suggestion that there was only one hook and loop expert in this case is just demonstrably false. The district court cited Point Blank's own expert, Mr. Page, who has all the necessary degrees to do the necessary analysis here, and found that if you peel the vest, it does not reach failure even after 2,500 different peels. In addition, Point Blank conducted a study showing how an officer takes on and off his vest or her vest is highly individualized. And in that instance, out of 29 officers, none of those officers sheared or ripped the vest to take it off. And again, it's not just shearing or ripping, it's repeated shearing or ripping. And at the end of the day, what Judge Ruiz found is that there's no class-wide evidence of a defect because only certain SSBS vests, when used in a certain way, will even meet plaintiff's defect theory. And that's critical here, it really is. This is not a case where a defective airbag may explode, regardless of how someone is driving a car. It's not a case where bulletproof vests have certain ballistic material like Xylon that may fail to stop a bullet, regardless of how the vest is being used. This is a case where everyone at the point of purchase receives a vest with a hook and loop system designed to last throughout the warranty period, unless the vest is repeatedly sheared or taken off. And there is no common evidence capable of resolving how officers take off their vests. As Mr. Somerville conceded, officers use their vests differently. They take off their vests differently. And that is uniquely bound up, that issue, which is hyper-individualized, is uniquely bound up with the issue of whether you can show a defect through class-wide common proof. And if you can't, no class can be certified. That is exactly what Judge Ruiz found. Second, the issue of class-wide design. It is fundamental that class certification is inappropriate if different product variations would need to be evaluated at trial to see if they are defective. That is the case here too. There are 8 different types of SSBS carriers, 65 different ballistic packages, and each hook material and each loop material has changed over time. And significantly, as even the plaintiffs admitted in their brief, as a result, there's not one common model, there are thousands. And again, that is as a result, at trial, each configuration would need to be separately examined to figure out whether or not there's a particular defect associated with that unique configuration. Again, any trial would descend into individualized issues and no class can be certified. Third, the issue of causation. No class can be certified, as Judge Ruiz found, because there's no class-wide evidence capable of resolving causation in one stroke. Judge Ruiz found that for those very few vests that lose adhesion and no longer work during the warranty period, there is no evidence of any common usage or common cause of that failure. Any problem could be caused by many different issues wholly unrelated to this alleged defect theory, such as how the vest is stored, or even if the officer had a work altercation, or if dust or debris somehow get into the vest itself. And for the consumer protection claims, Your Honors, there is no class-wide evidence that purchasers were exposed to, much less impacted by any class-wide statements or omissions. Plaintiffs offered none, and there are none. And this is because many different types of purchasers purchase many different types of SSBS vests under many different circumstances. Point blank actually has
What he argued today is that they've alleged that they all are going to fail. Every single one of them is going to fail before the 5-year period because of defective material or defective choice of material and design in the strap system. Yes, they may fail differently, some sooner than others, but they're all going to fail at some point. And that's enough to get the class certified. So, because all of them at the point of sale are going to fail because the material or the system is improperly designed and made.
And Your Honor, first, there's the absence of any evidence or factual support for that contention in the record. I'd like to note that
in class certification, you need to have an expert say that. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Your Honor, the question is, can you prove, and again, the defect is only one element of the claims. There's also causation, there's injury, there's damages. All of those issues, Judge Ruiz found, would descend into individualized issues. But let's just take the issue of whether there's common evidence capable of showing a class-wide defect, which you just raised, Your Honor. To the extent plaintiff's theory is that all vests will always fail, Judge Ruiz properly found that that is totally beyond the record. There's no evidence to support that. Plaintiff's class expert didn't make that finding whatsoever, as Judge Ruiz properly found when he scrutinized the expert testimony. Point Blank's expert found the opposite, that these vests hold up under a whole different range of tests throughout the warranty period. In addition, the return rate, which has been discussed, was less than 0.05% of these vests. But I think most importantly, to show why no class can be certified and why this notion that all vests would fail, it's totally belied by the individual declarations that Point Blank has submitted in this case. Point Blank submitted declarations from many different purchasers saying they've purchased multiple cycles of SSBS vests, that all of those vests worked without problem, and that they will continue to purchase these vests despite this lawsuit. That includes declarations from individual officers. It includes declarations from Officer Cederberg, for instance, who purchased multiple SSBS vests and in fact provided a declaration saying his vest saved his life. It didn't fail, it saved his life. There's also declarations from agencies like the City of San Antonio Police Department saying that they've purchased all of these vests and they've never seen any problem or heard of any problem or had officers raise any issue with them. Even sheriff's offices in Florida provided those declarations. And so the question is, what does that all mean? It means, one, any notion that all vests will fail, which is what plaintiffs now seem to be saying is their defect theory, is belied by the record and certainly belied by Judge Ruiz's findings. But more than that, this is relevant. And you, at trial, you would have to analyze each particular vest and each particular purchase to figure out whether the... Sure.
Do you have to have evidence that the vest failed if the complaint alleges a breach of a warranty of merchantability? And the issue whether there's a latent defect at the point of sale, if that's the allegation in your complaint?
At class certification, Your Honor, the allegations are no longer sufficient. And that's a teaching of Walmart, Comcast, Brown versus Electrolux, Clay versus it's an evidentiary burning. So at class certification, plaintiffs needed to provide common evidence capable of meeting the Rule 23 requirements. And they haven't provided that. To the extent the question is, do plaintiffs, with respect to the breach of warranty claims in particular, the issue of whether or not a defect will manifest during the warranty period is an element of those claims. And there's no class-wide common evidence of whether or not capable of showing that. Again, the declarations we've cited, the expert testimony Judge Ruiz looked at, found that this is just simply not capable of class-wide resolution. This is not a merits determination. It is a characterization of the evidence to figure out, can you prove your claims on a class-wide basis, or will a trial be overrun with individual issues? And in this instance, every element of every plaintiff's claims would be overrun with those individual issues. Is there a common design? Is there a common defect, or does it hinge upon use? Can you show causation on a class-wide basis? Can you show injury on a class-wide basis? And Judge Wilson, you raised the issue of an alleged tying harm to the point of sale and whether or not everyone was harmed at the point of sale. That gets into the issue, as Judge Ruiz found, that plaintiffs never presented a class-wide damages model. The damages model they provided is not consistent with their theory of liability. It measures nothing associated with market value at the point of purchase, nothing. And Judge Ruiz expressly found that. The warranty claims and the FIDUPTA claims all require a showing or some model capable of showing a decrease in market value at the time of purchase. And Judge Ruiz did an excellent job in actually quoting from plaintiff's experts saying, I measure none of that. And as a result, the plaintiffs couldn't even satisfy their burden under Comcast versus Barin to show a class-wide damages model consistent with their theory of liability. And that, again, is a separate independent reason why no class, why Judge Ruiz got it right and no class can be certified in this particular case. With respect to, there was some mention by plaintiffs, by Mr. Summerfield of Amgen and whether or not it's improper to look at the merits of claims. It is indisputable that at class certification under Walmart, under Amgen itself, and under the Supreme Court's recent case in Goldman Sachs versus Arkansas Teaching Retirement Fund, that one, a district court has the obligation to look at the merits of the claims and make factual findings when necessary to resolve the Rule 23 requirements. And in fact, when doing so, the district court needs to look at all evidence, not just the plaintiff's evidence, but all evidence in doing that. Judge Ruiz did precisely that. And lastly, I would just like to address, Your Honors, the issue of ascertainability, if I may, that the plaintiff started with that particular issue up front and cited the court's Cherry decision. The court's Cherry decision did recognize that, of course, ascertainability is no longer a threshold requirement. Judge Ruiz did not have the benefit of that decision at the time. However, it didn't say ascertainability is irrelevant. It just says it needs to be done in a 23B3 context. That said, this court need not even reach that question for all of the other independent grounds associated with the denial of class certification, including the failure to satisfy commonality, the failure to satisfy predominance for all of the reasons in our brief and that I've laid out here. And then lastly, I'll just note that there were other independent reasons for denying certification too, including choice of law problems, including the overbreadth of the proposed class here, including standing issues. All of those reasons are also independent grounds for affirming Judge Ruiz's decision denying class certification here. And thank you, Your Honor. I know I'm over my time. If I may add just one last point. I just want to note for the record, in this situation, Judge Ruiz really spent a lot of time evaluating the record, wading through all the testimony, issued a 34-page opinion. And if it were sufficient merely to allege a common class-wide defect and get a case certified based upon that allegation, which is all that exists here, it would basically render any defect case susceptible to certification. It would create a rule that anytime there's an alleged defect, a class needs to get certified. That's not the law of this circuit. That's not the law of the Supreme Court. And it flies in the face of the teachings of Comcast and Walmart, and even this court's precedent. Again, thank you very much for the time, Your Honors. I very much appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Mr. Ercola. And Mr. Summerfield, you reserve some time for rebuttal.
Yes, sir. Starting at the top, the question that Amgen and all of the other cases in the Supreme Court indicate is that the class certification stage, it's the common questions that matter, not the common answers that may or may not serve the merits of the class itself. And the judge, I will confess, wrote a very long order. There's parts of it that are just lifted straight from the defendant's brief. What would have helped a lot more in terms of the time is holding a hearing. This court's case in decision in Morrison in particular says when there's any doubt about the class certification or the weight of the evidence, or particularly when you have dueling experts like we apparently have in this one, although I will say that Dr. Cole is in fact the only hook and or Velcro expert out there. She's done that research for the U.S. military for almost 50 years now. But regardless, the key is to have a hearing so you can discern these nuances, and then we can determine whether or not the parameters of the class are appropriate or whether or not misuse is really a defense that doesn't defeat class certification in the first place. Or if there's a damages model, of course, we have class certifications and liability all the time with damages subclasses. None of that is a reason to deny certification in the first place. And where the trial court got really hung up is, of course, you have to take a peek at the merits. That's what the Supreme Court says. You don't have to decide it as if this was a summary judgment motion. This reads motion because there's weighing of evidence, which would be inappropriate at summary judgment. And while there have to be calls about factual evidence, you don't just fully embrace one or the other, particularly when the trial court got so much of this incorrect. Like, for example, the testing that the trial court said was critical, that's the word in the order, in determining that there was no point of sale defect, is based upon a study that's not even of the vests, with a particular pressure point where you're pushing these things together to seal them, that is about 1/11th, 9% of the pressure that is otherwise appropriate to test whether or not you've got a good fit for this particular kind of vest. And that also could have been fleshed out, the nuance that there are thousands of models of these. Not really. They're really four, because several of these are just duplicates. They just have a different sticker or a label on them. And the corporate representative made very clear that these are all supposed to be the same. It's not as if they gain extra dollars in taking the components and making them slightly different or tweak it in a little bit different in next year's model vest. What they really do is try to keep exactly the same thing, particularly since point blank went to this Chinese Velcro in 2014. Our expert said, Dr. Cole said, that every vest she tested after that transition in time failed.
Counsel, so, I have a quick question. Didn't the parties stipulate at Magistrate Judge Strauss's evidentiary hearing that you were withdrawing your Daubert motions as to Dr. Cole and Herman on the plaintiff's side and as to Salapu and Page on point blank side?
Your Honor, we'll find that in docket number 175. That's exactly right. So okay. Dr. Cole came in without objection at that point.
All right. But also that means that the parties have waived any kind of challenges that they might have that the district court might have found with respect to any of the experts, doesn't it?
In terms of classic, you know, trifecta challenges, I would agree with that. But in terms of weighing the expert evidence, which is precisely what the trial cut did, then that's what I would recommend a hearing on. And this court has said, look, if it's close, let's have a hearing, because you can say, well, you know, Mr. Page said that he did 2,500 tests. Well, unfortunately, the objective data says for the first 90% of those tests, simply the physics don't add up to what his opinion might be. And so at that point, the takeaway from the district court was that this proves there's not a defect at the point of sale because he did all of these tests that prove no failure, and yet it's the wrong test. So all of the rest of the arguments that have the courts heard this morning are really sort of rabbits that we chased in our reply brief. So I don't think there's a whole lot more that I want to say that I haven't said already, except that the damages model is one that I haven't talked about already. Our expert did exactly what is appropriate under either of the classes that we won, including the warranty class, Judge Wilson, that you mentioned, that would clearly apply from the point of sale for all of these defects, if indeed it's a defect, something that's susceptible to class proof. The damages model is simply a benefit of the bargain theory, not a repair analysis like my colleagues say. It's simply, if you wanted a vest that actually worked for 5 years, these straps can't do it. So you need something like the Python model, which point blank does produce, and that we could replace that vest for. That's the measure of damages, at least on the damages class. Other than that, of course, that doesn't address anything about the injunctive relief class or the other arguments for the California claims. All the warranty and the Florida deceptive practices claims, of course, once you have privity, don't require the reliance and the causation that the trial court got tripped up on. This warranty is printed inside the vest. It says it's 5 years and it goes to the end user. So the notion about reliance or anything of that nature is simply belied by the record. That's Exhibit 61 in the record, if the court wishes to pick. Other than that, the only thing I have to say is it's wonderful being able to talk to three judges in three different locations. I think the weather in Tampa and Miami is a lot better than it is in Atlanta. Judge Hull, you can check me on that. But it's a pleasure being in front of everyone as always. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Somerville and Mr. Cole. The case was well argued. We'll take the matter under advisement. That's the last case on the docket this morning. So this court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.